Hello and welcome to Optimizing Elimination. So before I begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that the information that I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's certainly not intended as medical advice. It's intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, and clinical experience and research over many years, decades in fact, and working with lots of people. But everybody is unique. So I encourage you to listen, take it all in, and then if you're under the care of any kind of medical professional, on any medication at all, being treated for any kind of condition, then I recommend that you have a discussion with your practitioner about the protocols that you are feeling called to do. So what are some symptoms you might notice of large intestine imbalance? It may be feeling that your bowels don't empty completely. You know that feeling. I'm sure you felt that. You have lower abdominal pain that's relieved by passing stool or gas. Maybe this just kind of pressure type pain. Maybe alternating constipation and diarrhea. More than 4 bowel movements a day or watery stools is considered diarrhea. So if you're having 3 bowel movements a day and they're, you know, soft and easy to pass, that's great. If you're having 3 bowel movements a day but they're watery, that's considered diarrhea. Even if you're only having 1 bowel movement a day but it's very watery, that could be considered diarrhea. So anything other than 2 to 3 really nice, well-formed, soft stools a day is considered either diarrhea or constipation. Constipation, less than 2 bowel movements a day, believe it or not, is really the functional definition of constipation. Some doctors are still telling people it's okay, it's normal for you to have a bowel movement every 3 or 4 days or once a week. Even once a day, if you're eating regularly, is not enough. If you're eating 3 full meals a day, you should be having 2 to 3 good bowel movements a day. You really should be having 3, one after each major meal. But if you have a tiny meal, you're not necessarily going to have that happen. So that's why I say 2 to 3. Hard or dry small stools, it's a sign of dysfunction of your large intestine. And itchy anus. Itchy anus can be that things are passing through too slowly and the toxins are irritating your anus, but it could also be a parasitic or overgrowth of an intestinal organism. Other signs, a coated tongue or fuzzy debris on tongue is considered a sign of large intestine imbalance, not eliminating properly. And if it's yellowish in Chinese medicine, it's considered heat. So you're developing too much heat in your body as well as not eliminating well. When you pass a lot of foul-smelling gas, that's a surefire sign. It's embarrassing as well as uncomfortable. More than 3 bowel movements a day. When you have to use laxatives to keep your bowels moving, surefire sign. Blood or mucus in your stool. Blood in your stool is a warning sign. It's a serious warning sign. So if you've got some blood in your stool, you want to differentiate between whether you've got like a hemorrhoid or a fissure right at the opening, which is not as serious as if you have something further up, like a lesion, a tumor that's causing the blood. So if you ever see blood in your stool, unless you can actually pinpoint that you know for sure it's very bright red blood and it's a hemorrhoid, then you want to get that checked out. You want to have a stool test done. Irritable bowel, you know, that constant alternating between constipation and diarrhea, or the feeling of cramping, inflammatory bowel diseases, and that's a history if somebody's told you, hey, you have Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, and then episodes of left-sided pain, which could be diverticular. So you want to make sure you get those things checked out. So let's look at a few of the things that can go wrong. Obviously, constipation we've talked about. Obviously, diarrhea, gas and bloating, pain, dysbiosis, meaning infections, and this can be hallmarked by just chronic constipation, diarrhea, gas, bloating, pain, foul-smelling gas, or it could be hallmarked by an acute onset. So the other things that can go wrong in your large intestine, something called inflammatory bowel disease, and we'll look at some of those pictures of what that looks like. That's a pretty serious condition. Diverticulosis, diverticulitis, hemorrhoids, polyps, and impaction. So the stuff on the left-hand side, constipation, diarrhea, gas, bloating, pain, dysbiosis, infections, and irritable bowel, can be signs of a functional impairment. Once you move into things on the right-hand side, like inflammatory bowel, diverticulosis or itis, hemorrhoids, polyps, and impaction, these are more physical, mechanical. These are more changes, actual changes in the bowel itself, more of a physical and mechanical changes, and can be more serious. What are some of the things that you need to be doing to help get your gut in balance? Well, one is adding probiotics to re-inoculate your gut. Things like kimchi, sauerkraut, coconut kefir, seed yogurt, kombucha, Rejuvelac, miso, and various probiotic supplements. And we talked a lot of detail about this in our part four. We also talked about prebiotics, which are supplements and foods that feed your good bacteria, so help them to grow and to multiply better. This is a picture of a Jerusalem artichoke, that also dandelion's good, wild yam, Jerusalem artichoke, chicory, green vegetable chicory, wonderful source of inulin and prebiotic, jicama, burdock root, onion, garlic, yacon. So these are all foods that you can eat to help the good organisms in your gut to function better. So what if you have irritable bowel syndrome? Not too fun. Up to 15% of the population has irritable bowel syndrome. That's huge. Why is this such a problem? It's more common in women than men and seems to be somewhat related to hormones. What it consists of is diarrhea with urgency or constipation or alternating constipation and diarrhea. And usually there's some degree of cramping, bloating, and mucus in the stool. So what are some causes of irritable bowel? Well, stress, the hormone cortisol messes up your peristalsis, which is the contractile wave in your gut, and it also messes up your probiotics and decreases enzymes. GI motor problems. So problems with actually the nerve supply going to the muscles in the gut. And some of that can be related to having lower back subluxations. So a good chiropractor or osteopath can help you with that. Hypersensitivity, food sensitivities, foods that cause irritation. Infections, big time, either overt infections like getting food poisoning or something kind of like giardia, or low-grade infections that develop over time due to poor inoculation with good probiotics. Hormones, that's why this happens more commonly in women, because the hormones, the estrogen progesterone imbalances that happen around menstrual periods often cause an aggravation of irritable bowel syndrome. Neurotransmitters, there's a lot of serotonin receptors in your gut, and over or under stimulation of those receptors can create irritable bowel. Of course, gut flora imbalance, the poor organisms versus the good organisms, when you have too much of overgrowth, you'll tend to get irritable bowel. And then food sensitivities, especially to gluten and dairy, but it could be to any foods. Always recommend anybody with irritable bowel get off of gluten and dairy, and in, I would say, 90% of the cases, they get immediate relief just by going off the gluten and dairy. And then, of course, there's other things we can do. And genetics does play a factor in this. Some people just have the gut as being their genetic weak link. But that doesn't mean that you have to live with it. Genetics is not a life sentence. Genetics just gives you a predisposition. And it's the habits that you form that determine what the genetics are going to do for you. So with IBS, things called carminative herbs are extremely important. Carminative herbs help to calm things down and dispel gas. So they reduce gas and bloating. They enhance the secretions of your digestive tract, your enzymes, and your hydrochloric acid. They help to tone your digestive tract. So they have an effect on the musculature and the rhythmic contract-relax that's called peristalsis. They reduce smooth muscle spasms, they increase peristalsis, and there's a lot of them that you may already know about and include. And the more of these that you start to include on your regular basis in your diet, in your smoothies, in your soups, in your salad dressings, in your dips, in your stews, whatever you make, you can include these. So dill is one of my all-time favorites, as well as fennel. Some people take fennel drops when they have gas. You could take fennel or chew on fennel seeds. in Indian restaurants, they have usually have a little bowl right by the checkout where you take a little spoonful of fennel seeds and you chew them after a meal. Carminative helps everything to go through better. Ginger, which is a really great anti-inflammatory, and it calms things down. Caraway seeds, same thing. You can include that in your probiotics. I love sauerkraut with caraway seeds. Cinnamon, very common, also helps with blood sugar imbalances. So it's one of those versatile herbs that's easy to incorporate because it tastes so good. Turmeric is an Indian spice, curcuma longa, curcuma aromatica, also a Chinese herb, and it's awesome for your digestive tract, and it's an awesome anti-inflammatory and antioxidant. Clove, not one that you would be taking in large quantities, but clove is a really good one for killing off the eggs of parasites. So if you drink a little eggnog around the holidays and put some clove into it, or add a pinch of clove to some of your sweet recipes, it's just an awesome way. Pumpkin pie smoothie, pumpkin pie. Cardamom, same thing. It's one of those sweeter herbs, and I use it in smoothies and also in like a nut milk, really yummy in nut milk. Chamomile, which is a very common tea that's used to drink and soothe and calm the digestive tract. Oregano, which in addition to being a carminative is also an antimicrobial, so can help kill off the bad gut critters while helping to enhance the good gut critters. Then there's rosemary in the same family as oregano, and these Italian herbs are just super powerhouses for your immune system as well as for your gut lining. Thyme, another one of those Italian, the Italian group. So we've got a nice long list of herbs that you may already know. You probably have all or most of these in your herb cabinet in your kitchen, and you could just start using these to add therapeutic value to your foods. So let's talk about a few of the natural anti-spasmodic herbs for irritable bowel. These are the ones that specifically calm things down. And you'll notice a few of these are the same as on the other page for the carminatives. We've got chamomile, very common chamomile tea. You can include chamomile, a strong solution of chamomile to calm things down. It's also great for helping you to get a good night's sleep. Wild yam, it's not one that you would use long-term, but the short-term use, like several weeks to a month of wild yam, either taken as a tincture, capsules, or as a tea, would be very good for calming down your gut. Valerian, it's a strong one, so you want to take valerian just later in the night, like towards bedtime, because if you take it during the day, it may really calm you down too much to be able to drive or to be able to function well at work. Kudzu is used a lot in macrobiotics. It's like an arrowroot. It's a powder that it's thickener. It can be used to thicken gravies, and you can use that, add kudzu to certain things to thicken it and soothe your digestive tract, calm it down. And finally, peppermint. Peppermint very much soothes and calms things down, so much so that if you have a problem with reflux, with the lower esophageal sphincter, it may relax that too much and aggravate your reflux. So peppermint, avoid if you have reflux in addition to IBS, but if you just have IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, peppermint's a great choice. Okay, so we talked about irritable bowel. Let's talk about the ileocecal valve. And that, as I talked about earlier, is the valve that's between your small and your large intestine. So how do you know whether you've got a problem? Well, normally the distension of your ileum causes the valve to open. Okay, you can also get the valve to open when food gets into your stomach. It causes what's called the gastroileal reflex. And this food in your stomach causes a signal to be sent down neurologically to the ileocecal valve and ask it to open. So two ways of it opening. Stress causes it to contract and get stuck. And it can get stuck in either the open position or the closed position. When it gets stuck open, it causes a backflow of the intestinal contents from the large intestine to flow back into the small intestine. And we know that there's a lot of waste product going into the large intestine. So once it passes through, we don't want it coming back in. It can cause a lot of aggravation and irritation. If the ileocecal valve gets stuck closed, it causes a lack of progression of the feces from the small intestine to the large intestine, which could cause bloating and gas and constipation. So some of the symptoms of ileocecal valve dysfunction. One is constipation, and that's when it's stuck in the closed position. One is palpitations, because when you've got a backflow of waste products from the large intestine into the small intestine, it causes a stress response. It can cause chest pain with activity, because there's a reflex that goes back from that area up to your diaphragm, and it causes your diaphragm to get aggravated and irritated, and can cause you can get chest pain. You can also get something called pseudomeniere, which is like a ringing in your ears. And if you've got a ringing in your ears, it may or may not be related to the ear itself. It could be a reflux from the ileocecal valve. Ileocecal valve dysfunction can also cause migraine headaches, as well as edema anywhere in your body. So you can see that it's not limited to just symptoms in your gut. That ileocecal valve dysfunction is a very common problem and can lead to problems elsewhere in your body. Because of the way it affects the diaphragm, you can get right shoulder pain when you have dysfunction of the ileocecal valve, as well as neck stiffness. And I've found that to be the case myself sometimes. I'll suddenly get my neck really stiff, but have this feeling of kind of irritation in that lower quadrant. And when I work on my ileocecal valve, it all goes away. You can have nausea in the middle of the afternoon. It can cause dizziness. It can cause tinnitus and dark circles under your eyes. And I think the reason for the dizziness and the tinnitus and some of the things in your head is that the reflex that goes back and irritates the diaphragm is controlled by C3, which is in your neck, and then that has a reflex up into your head. So we're all connected, right? The neck bone's connected to the toe bone, right? It's all connected. There's all these reflex arcs. And when we have certain symptoms, it's nice to know that maybe it's being caused by a problem elsewhere. And also just general overall achiness. So I want to just remind you where the ileocecal valve is and give you a few reflex points that you can rub on when you feel like any of these symptoms on the previous page come up, or when you're feeling that bloated gas, constipation, diarrhea, or just uncomfortable in your gut. So it's located here between the large and the small intestine. So if we were to draw an imaginary line from the belly button, which would be right around here where my arrow is pointing, down to the ileocecal valve at an angle, it's right located on a straight line right up from your hip bone. If you were to go two-thirds of the way down from the belly button to your hip bone, you'll find the ileocecal valve. And on the body here, you see the belly button and the hip bone here. That little dot right around here would be your ileocecal valve. You can rub right on that little dot, and that can be really helpful. Circular motions, counterclockwise or clockwise, depending on whether it's open or closed. So go back to some of the thoughts about if it's open, you're more likely to have backlog, so bloating and gas. If it's closed, you're more likely to have constipation. And if you're not sure, just rub in both directions and it's bound to help. You can also go to the outer parts of both thighs and the inner parts of both thighs. There's some reflex points that help. And then up here at the arm, if you go between the chest and the arm, there's a little line there that you can rub. And when you're rubbing on those lines, I recommend circular motions, just all down, starting at the top of the line, going down to the bottom, and repeat that 10 times or so. Another way is to lie on your back with your knees bent and put your hand right over that ileocecal valve and just massage it really, really, really well. And you can also massage your entire abdomen by doing circular motions around your belly button and then up and around your large intestine. So let's talk about the infamous transit time. As I've said many times before, it's the time it takes food to go from your mouth to your anus. It should be between 18 and 24 hours. You can test this using charcoal. What I recommend you do is you get some charcoal tablets, you take a handful, 4, 5, 6 charcoal tablets, you swallow them down, you note the time at which you swallow them down. You watch your bowel movements over the next couple of days. The very first time you notice the black coming out in your stool, you mark down that time. You continue to watch your stool to the very last time you notice. For some people, you just notice it that one time. It eliminates all pretty much at the same time, and then you're done. But the time between the first and the last time you see it will give you an assessment of how slow or fast your transit time is. From the time you swallow the charcoal till the time you first see it in your stool, it should be no less than 18 hours, but no more than 24. And actually, the last of it should be out within the 24 hours as well. Maybe a little tiny bit longer, but if you're seeing it come out at 18 hours for starters, but the rest, it's not completely eliminated for 36 hours, it means that's an indication of what's also happening with your food, which means it's in there too long, causing too much toxic reabsorption. And it's important that you're eliminating on a regular basis. Even Hippocrates, who's considered the father of modern medicine, has urged in his writings, there were some writings that talked about you need to have large, bulky motions after every meal. And that would be really your ideal. So how do you improve the transit time? Well, you avoid irritants, which can slow down or speed up your transit time. Caffeine, alcohol, processed fats, anything that says hydrogenated fats, or cooked and heated fats, very damaging and dangerous for your mucous membranes throughout your body. Chocolate, wheat, and dairy. Avoid allergens. Culprits are usually wheat, corn, soy, dairy, eggs, and peanuts, but not for everyone. But anything can have a sensitivity reaction, so check. And the Food Allergy Spy Training is a program that will take you through an exact process for determining what your food allergies are, if it's not really clear, just by eliminating those six and then testing. Relax before and during all your meals. It's important to take deep breaths and avoid multitasking while you're eating. Really focus on your digestion so that your body is optimal at producing enzymes. Eat enough fruit and vegetables, fiber, really important. For some people, just adding fruit and water helps improve transit time. And we're talking about the water, high water content fruit, not things like dried fruits and bananas. Drink enough water to keep things moving along. You need to make sure, not necessarily during your meals, but half an hour before, half an hour after, and between meals, that you drink plenty of water. And if you're not having very light, pale, or clear eliminations, urinations, then that indicates that you're not drinking enough water. You need to be improving it. So the rule of thumb is half your body weight in fluid ounces. But for some folks, they need more, especially if you're exercising or if you tend to sweat easily. Using mucilaginous foods to lubricate your food. And we talked a lot about mucilaginous foods in part four. Chia seeds, flax seeds, slippery elm, etc. Keeping your gut critters balanced with the probiotics and anti-candida protocols that we talked about in the last part of the module. But also, we gave you a list of those probiotics and prebiotic foods that you can be eating to help improve that. And finally, exercise is critical to keep your muscles in the large intestine working properly. You also, abdominal exercises, things that contract and relax your abdomen, will help improve peristalsis, which is the rhythmic movement of food through your colon. So let's just take a quick look at some of the more serious large intestine diseases. We're not going to go into these in extreme detail, but things that functional imbalances like irritable bowel and dysbiosis can lead to, and the ileocecal valve dysfunction over the long haul. So ulcerative colitis, which is all this really yucky ulcerations in your intestinal tract. Polyps, which are these little kind of balls, like little excess growths. Diverticulosis and diverticulitis, see the little hole? That's an increase in the size of the regular diverticuli, which are these little outpouchings. And also when that gets inflamed, that's diverticulitis. Here's a diverticulitis example. There's also, in addition to ulcerative colitis, there's something called Crohn's disease, which is more a deeper form. The things that help best with any kind of irritation, especially with irritable bowel and inflammatory bowel, are demulcent herbs. So let's just review some of those, what the demulcent herbs do and what they are. We went through this also in the small intestine presentation. So demulcent herbs will soothe your GI tract, They'll help to rebuild the mucus layer. They're anti-inflammatory. They bring down inflammation. They lubricate your digestive tract so everything flows through more easily. They nourish your body fluids and tissues. And some of my favorites, all-time chia. It's easy to eat. It's delicious. It can be made into puddings and drinks and desserts and even crackers. And it's just an awesome demulcent. Flax seeds, same thing. I prefer chia just because the flax seeds tend to get stuck in the teeth more easily, but I do alternate between them and sometimes mix them together. Licorice. You have to be careful about full-strength licorice. You might want to get DGL licorice if you have a tendency towards high blood pressure. But if you have a tendency towards adrenal fatigue and low blood pressure, then licorice without the DGL is just fine. Just make sure that you periodically monitor your blood pressure and that you don't take too much of it. Marshmallow is another one, and it's really an awesome herb. You can get it as a root. You can get it as little pieces that you can make into a tea. You can get it as a powder, and you can make it into a kind of a gruel that you can take to help with your intestine. The same thing with slippery elm. Slippery elm and marshmallow work similarly, and some people like one better than the other. They can also be flavored because they're kind of bland and kind of mucousy, but you can flavor them with peppermint or licorice or any number, cinnamon, anything you like. Irish moss is a sea vegetable, and you can soak it and then put it in the blender with water and make it into a gel that's really good demulcent, and it also makes really nice foods. Cinnamon is a great, yummy spice. So it's demulcent, it's anti-inflammatory, it's also lowers your blood sugar or helps stabilize your blood sugar. Chamomile, we've talked about that as one of the antispasmodics. Fenugreek is another demulcent, and fenugreek comes as little seeds. You can grind them up and put it into things, or you can just take it as a tea. Jujube dates, they look kind of like regular dates, only they're not quite as sweet. And they're very demulcent. Aloe vera. And you can get aloe vera in a jar, but be careful that it's enzymatically still intact. There's polysaccharides in aloe vera that help soothe and heal your digestive tract. And also, you can get it as the whole leaves. Sometimes in the gourmet stores, the Mexican stores, even some of the health food stores, you can get the giant leaves and open them. Or you can grow it. You can grow your own aloe vera gel. And take the gel out. Plantain is a green plant that grows wild. We have it growing wild in our backyard. You can take it and make it as a tea. You can get it dried and make it as a tea. You can grind it up and use it as a topical demulcent as well. But it's a great soothing herb. Put it in some green smoothies as an extra demulcent. Calendula, you can get the flowers of the calendula plant. They make it into homeopathic creams and just herbal kinds of creams and lotions. Excellent. And if you're going to take it internally, you don't want to obviously take it as a cream or a lotion, but you can make it as a tea. Works really well as a tea. And then yarrow is another one, really healing. If you have an open wound and something's bleeding a lot, you have a yarrow plant and you pack that on top of it, you can stop that bleeding almost immediately. So taken internally, it's really good for any of these inflammatory conditions, especially the ulcerative types. And you can take it as a tea. You can blend it. So here's a summary of some of the anti-inflammatory foods and nutrients that help to heal your gut. We've gone through these before. I'll just really quickly review them. Got ginger, turmeric, licorice, chia, flax, hemp seeds, deep ocean fish. And the reason for the chia, flax, hemp, and deep ocean fish, if you're not vegetarian, I don't personally choose the deep ocean fish, but a lot of people do, because they're high in omega-3 fats. And omega-3 fats are very anti-inflammatory. They help your body to manage the inflammation. Algae and sea greens are also good sources of not just omega-3 fats, but also minerals. Really good source of minerals and very absorbable protein. Purslane's another wild vegetable. Again, good source of minerals and highly absorbable protein, but also omega-3s. Vitamin C, omega-3 fats that you take as separate supplements. Bromelain, which is an enzyme found in pineapple and other proteolytic enzymes, help to bring down inflammation. Capsaicin, which comes from red pepper. And a lot of people just can't eat capsaicin can eat red pepper because it hurts when they have inflammation. But on the other hand, if there's a way to take it like in a capsule form where you can actually get it in and actually helps the inflammation dramatically. And then our favorite cinnamon, rosemary, basil, cardamom, chives, cilantro, cloves, garlic, parsley. These are all food-based herbs. You probably have them already. It's just a matter of starting to use them more deliberately. Boswellia is an anti-inflammatory bioflavonoid, as is quercetin. Quercetin is found in onions as well as lots of other foods, but especially high in onions. You can also get these as supplements, but the foods are great to include. So here's a list of your gut-friendly foods to include daily. At least 32 ounces of green smoothie. If you are having trouble with irritable bowel or inflammatory bowel disease, and even taking in green smoothies, the raw fibers, you can ferment your green smoothies, and you can also lightly heat the vegetables before you make them, and those would help dramatically. Sea vegetables are awesome to include, and you can soak them and rehydrate them and then blend them in with foods, or you can eat them, just grind them and sprinkle them for a salty condiment type flavor. Chlorella, which is one of the microalgaes, probiotic-containing foods, which we talked about previously, like sauerkraut, kimchi, kefir, and the like. Lots and lots of greens in every way, shape, and form. So as green juices, as green smoothies, blended into salad dressings, made into crackers and breads, I said juiced already, fermented, all sorts of ways to take in lots of greens, steamed. Brassicas are really important for healing your gut, so make sure that you're including them, and they're really good for keeping your elimination moving. All of these things are going to keep you eliminated more regularly, as long as you do them along with plenty of liquid, plenty of water. All right. When fruit is eaten, if you've got gut dysfunction, you may have to limit the fruit while you're getting rid of things like candida and funguses. It tends to work better if you blend them along with green leafy vegetables so that you don't have sudden rises in blood sugar and the potential to feed those yeasty beasties. And finally, an enzyme or two with all your meals, except if you're just doing juice only. But if you have really severely impaired digestion and elimination, try the enzymes with all meals and make sure you keep moving. So let's just look at a few of the organ-specific healing foods. We've got licorice and slippery elm, which work best for the stomach and the intestinal lining. We've got your probiotics, which are best for your large and your small intestine. We've got fiber, which is good for the entire digestive tract. Cabbage, which is awesome for your stomach. Chia and flax, which are great for your small and large intestine. Milk thistle, which is great for your liver and gallbladder. Short-chain fatty acids, which are good for your colon. And one further thing I want to say about your liver and gallbladder. Sometimes elimination is sluggish in the intestine. You have constipation because of dysfunction in your liver and your gallbladder, not producing enough bile, not eliminating it or excreting enough bile from your gallbladder, and having sluggish detoxification. So some of the herbs that we talked about, like dandelion and milk thistle and burdock, are really good for helping with constipation because they help support the liver. A few other herbs that you may not think about when you think about constipation or liver are things like dong quai and yellow dock. Yellow dock is a really amazing herb for helping produce more stomach acid and helping deal with constipation. Finally, if you are a stress bunny, if you get you just get aggravated and irritated throughout the day because of circumstances in your life, you've got to learn to control it. And I know you can't necessarily get rid of those stresses, but you can control how you relate. Because 5 minutes of anger causes a decrease in your secretory IgA, which is the immune system protection, the nice membrane protection in your gut. And it goes down dramatically when you're aggravated and irritated and angry. And it goes up when you are in appreciation and care. So this is all research by the Institute of Heart Math, and it all goes into why I recommend that before each meal, every single meal, before you put any food in your body, let go of the stress. Because if not, you might as well not eat. it's all just going to get utilized and added to the toxic mush. But if you take a few minutes, even a minute, to breathe and relax, go ahead and do it now. Even that one deliberate breath with your eyes closed and allowing your shoulders to drop is going to help to reduce your levels of cortisol down to a manageable level so that it optimizes your digestion. So let's talk about that pre-meal ritual that I recommend. And I recommend you do it with every meal. First of all, stop. Whatever you're doing, stop. Are you typing an email to somebody? Stop before you shovel some food into your mouth. Right? Are you driving the car? Stop. Pull over. Eat in a more relaxed state. Are you watching the news? Turn it off. Stop what you're doing and at least for a few moments, focus on the task at hand, which is to fully nourish your body. Look at the food. It's beautiful if you're doing it right. It's full of color. It's full of beauty. It's full of nutrition. It's just a sight to behold. Look and enjoy and appreciate it. Tune into your heart. Love your food. Love your body. Love your digestive tract. Love your elimination. Love all the things that your body can do for you. And breathe fully and deeply. And feel sincere appreciation. And if you don't, just fake it till you make it. And really, I mean that. Just, if you can't feel it, just pretend you do. Because after a while, you will. It's hard not to appreciate the beautiful food that's sitting on your plate. It's hard not to appreciate nature and God and whatever you believe in that produced that food to you. It's hard not to appreciate this intricacy of your body, which I've tried to explain to you over the course of these videos, but have only just barely touched the surface. It's so wise and so smart and so knows how to take care of you. Give it the appreciation it deserves. You need to do this every time you've put food into your body. And you know what? When you practice it, you can do it all in less than a minute. You can do it all in one breath, but only after you've practiced it for a while. So go ahead and practice it. Go ahead and put this into use. It's going to optimize your digestion. It's going to optimize your elimination. Your peristalsis, that contractile rhythmic movement, is going to be enhanced. The gut critters, they're going to be healthy and happy when you do this. And your elimination is going to be better. So let's talk about just a few things that you can do, not just on a regular basis, but throughout the year. We showed you a 30-day process that you can do to heal your elimination and heal your gut. And that was in part 4. I recommend that 30-day process be done at least once a year. Just once a year. Take some time out. It involves a couple of days of liquid only, and then it involves 30 days of taking some supplements and making sure that you're eating lots of greens and keeping off the allergens. A green cleanse. I love green cleansing 4 times a year. And that's where you do it on one of many levels. You can either just drink green juices for a whole week. You can just drink green smoothies for a week. Or you can do a day or two or three of drinking just the smoothies or the green juices. And then the rest of the week, you just eat green foods, lots of them. And you can lightly steam them and you can process them and press them and saute them slightly. But just green foods, staying away from the heavy foods, staying away from the hard to digest things and drinking your greens 2 to 3 times a day. Do it 4 times a year. 4 times a year, this will help you to fully reinforce your habits thus far. It will help you to give your gut a break. It helps to support your liver because it doesn't have all the fats to digest. It gets things moving in your system. With all this green and fiber going through you, it gets things moving. It helps you to show appreciation. Add some fun. Adding fun to your life helps you to have the attitude and the stress reduction that causes your digestion to function so much better. and you can reward yourself for a job well done and thus reinforce the great habits. So let's just take a quick look at our daily schedule. Start with your AM Gut Rejuvenator, your water, lemon, and peppermint oils, and optionally cayenne pepper. Whichever ones you tolerate the best, come up with your own AM Gut Rejuvenator. But everyone that does it claims that they just absolutely love it because it just feels like it gets their gut going. Before you even put food in, drink at least 16 ounces of this, if not up to 32, especially if you have trouble with constipation. Have a green breakfast with chia seeds. Again, it keeps things moving. It loads you up with lots of nutrition, lots of minerals, lots of omega-3s, but keeps things moving through your digestive tract, heals and soothes it. Do heart math before every meal. The breathing and appreciation, the pre-meal ritual, as I just described on the previous slides. Chew, 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 chew. I can't emphasize that enough, or blend your food, because the unchewed food, the big pieces, do nothing but irritate and aggravate the lining of your gut. Eat 4 cups of brassicas, including broccoli sprouts and 2 teaspoons of ground broccoli seeds daily. If you don't tolerate the broccoli seeds ground up well, just do the brassicas. Some people don't, but most people do, and that's really good for enhancing detoxification. Avoid the gut herders. You heard me. Gut herders are gluten, dairy, sugar, alcohol, caffeine. Also processed fats, processed starches. Foods that are not real food can be aggravating. And there's a complete list in the first module. Greens at every meal, whether it's smoothies, soups, juices, blended greens in a salad dressing, blended greens turned into a cracker or a bread. There's so many ways, wraps and rolls, and we've got lots of recipes for you. Probiotic foods and prebiotic foods, I will add, including juices, smoothies, and supplements. And know that you can ferment your juices and your smoothies, and you can ferment coconut water and nut milks into these amazing probiotic beverages. Having bitters before each meal. Whether that means carrying a little tincture of bitters in your purse with you or your backpack or whatever you carry, and having a little before meal, or making sure that you grab a few pieces of really bitter greens from your salad and chew it to a pulp before each meal, or make a little juice and drink that before each meal. About 15 minutes, and it stimulates your stomach to produce more stomach acid and stimulates your liver and gallbladder to produce and release bile more efficiently. Have enzymes with your meals, or eat enzyme-rich foods like fermented foods with each meal to help with the absorption, the digestion of those foods. Exercise regularly. Keep the peristalsis moving. And then do some abdominal massage on a regular basis to keep things moving. If you put this list of actions into place, your digestion is going to hum. If you add to it the 4 times a year green cleanse and the once a year 30-day intestinal healing routine, you're going to be great. Make sure you exercise. Make sure you drink plenty of water, half your body weight in fluid ounces or more, enough to make your urine clear, except for maybe the first morning, which might have a little bit of a tinge. But even the first morning urine, it should not be dark yellow or golden. It should be relatively clear. And if it's not, you're not drinking enough. So go ahead and get these things into play. This is going to take a load off your adrenal gland to help you to get your energy back, recharge, revitalize, and be the best you can.